We're going to talk about a little bit about the district plan. This is a monster document. How many pages, John? Like nearly 1,000, was it?
I've not actually looked to see how many pages it ended up.
But I think it did. But it's not easy reading, and well, we've only
993 that I've copied, and then there's quite a lot which I didn't copy relating to Huntley and all the other towns. So. Yeah, it must be well over 1,000 altogether.
Oh, okay, yeah, John sent me his special version, but no contents page. Like, is there a contents page? You just didn't put it in, or what happened?
No, there isn't a content. Well, the contents page is on the council's website.
Oh.
So they have got a district plan website, and if you click on enough of the crosses there, then you can open it all up and see that there's well over 70 documents. And to that extent, it's got headings like contaminated land, hazardous substances, natural hazards and climate change, historic heritage and all that sort of stuff. And as I say, there's over 70 of those headings.
Mm. Well, look, let's look. I just want to quickly mention what the council said was their big deals.
Should we explain what district plan is for those who are wondering what we're going on about?
Well, I tend to say it's basically what we can do on the property that we own, pretty much. Is that a very one-sentence answer, John, that you're happy with?
Yeah, well, it's also how much places like Raglan are going to grow in the next, 10 years, isn't it, the district plan?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So the kind of headline stuff that council said is in it. Extra land being zoned for urban growth in our towns, including Raglan, and a future urban zone to indicate suitable areas for predicted growth. Yes. Industrial zones will be better protected for industrial-focused activity. I don't even know what that means. Farming operations will receive more support. High-quality soils will be protected. One thing I wanted to highlight in particular is the proposed Oheniwai Sleepyhead development, which is creating a town for Sleepyhead to employ workers in a factory. Council says it's going to create 2,600 new jobs and 1,100 new and affordable homes. My main takeaway from this is that it's Mayor Alan Sanson's legacy project, and he's got it through, which means I'm calculating a greater chance that he will retire at the election at later on this year, John.
Possibly.
Yeah, I don't hear enthusiasm in your voice. He might change his mind, you reckon?
Well, not too long ago, I talked to the deputy mayor and he didn't seem at all sure what the mayor was going to do at the election.
Yeah, it's a tendency to want to go back, isn't there?
Yeah, because apparently he was dithering last time and he's dithering again this time. But,
he told me last time on an interview that he was pretty sure he wasn't coming back, that this would be the last time. I think his wife will be definitely telling him he shouldn't be going back.
Yeah, well, we'll see. The nominations need to be in August, I think.
Okay, all right. So that's a ways off.
Yeah.
Let's look at... So to give a bit of background, the area I was paying attention to, and we've talked about this a lot in the past... When a lot of people in Raglan submitted about a Raglan special character zone, and a handful of us ended up working with council staff to write it up, and we did a lot of work and a whole lot of stuff was written, and then the very last message we got from council was, "Can you guys just or sort of just sign off on what they'd written?" And at the last minute, the high level people at council had taken out huge sections of what had been written up. Which felt like we'd had the rug pulled out from under us, but then even what was left still hasn't gone in. The commission's just decided, no, we're not doing that. Thanks for your help, John. John, you've gone through district council district plan review processes a lot in the past. Is this fairly typical?
You win some and you lose some. And then you need to decide at this stage whether there's any that you've lost that you feel strongly enough about to want to appeal to the Environment Court. And before it gets to the Environment Court, it goes through probably a couple of years of negotiations with council. And if it's anything like last time, council were threatening that it was going to cost me about $20,000 to take it to court. So that they use that sort of bullying process to persuade people not to object at the end of the day.
Did it cost you $20,000 to go to the Environment Court?
No, I won and they lost. And I didn't care any more about $20,000.
So if you had lost, would you have had to...
Presumably the ratepayers paid $20,000.
If you had lost, John, would you have had to pay the costs?
Yes.
Ooh.
Which is quite a disincentive. But I mean, at this stage, you're not committing for that. As I say, you're still going through a negotiation process, and as the negotiations go on, the council will give way on a few things, but most things they'll stick to what they've decided, and then they'll say to you things like, you know, it's going to cost you a lot of money if you appeal this. So that's when people who put in objections need to think, am I going to go ahead with this, or am I going to do some fundraising, or am I going to join in with somebody else who's already appealing it?
Good Lord. So the big thing for me now, looking back, is the housing issue and the housing crisis. We had Whangaroa Affordable Housing trying to convince the commissioners to put the word affordable into the district plan. We tried with the Raglan Special Character Zone, saying that Raglan's character developed because it was not with a lot of relatively low income people, and a kind of created the unique character, the small houses in Raglan. That's a very brief overview of the argument, and that was, we were working to put that in, and then there was the high level managers at council took it out. The Oranga Tamariki was submitting to the district plan to have zones where there were smaller lot sizes like 200 square meters. I know they've been ignored. They haven't even dropped the minimum size is still 450. They haven't even done a little thing of dropping it to 400 to make it look like they did anything. Our councillor Lisa Thompson was talking with staff before the district plan, or in the early days, about tiny house areas and things like that, and they've just done nothing about the lot sizes or anything like that to help with the housing crisis. I'm unimpressed, let's say.
Yeah, I'm just reading one of the submissions that got put in saying there should be a variety of housing densities provided for and adequate housing reserved for low-cost rentals and purchases by permanent residents.
Yeah.
So that's one of the submissions that has been rejected. So people might want to appeal on that basis. Because there's nothing in the plan itself about costs or affordability or anything like that. So.
Yeah. And I think this is a thing with, I mean, we're dealing with the bureaucracy and bureaucratic people, and their loyalty is to the system, and certainly their job is to make the system work properly. And that's important. Like, you want the district plan to actually be functional and not cause too many problems. So I get that their focus is on making it work properly and keeping the system running smoothly. But the problem is that the system is broken. We have a crisis. We have a housing crisis, and it's not a time for maintaining the system.
Yep. I suppose their argument is that they're providing a huge amount of extra housing. I think they would argue that in the open market, that ought to keep costs down. But as we've seen in Raglan, there's been huge amounts of land made available, but prices are still shooting up.
Yeah, and they were told by Whangaroa Affordable Housing Project, Fiona McNabb submitted to them and presented evidence that at that time, which we're talking when they originally submitted, it must have been 3 years ago, the information.
Four years ago, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah, but I remember talking with her on the air about the info that they'd gathered, that the housing market was only serving the top 25% of income earners, and that's a few years ago. So now I'd hazard a guess it's serving only the top 10% of income earners. So the idea that just making more lot sizes, more lots, is going to solve that problem, well, it's not. I mean, yeah. It's just not.
It ends up with people who are landlords acquiring still more properties, and then putting rents up to levels that people can really hardly afford.
Yeah, and that's part of the neoliberal model, which governments are responsible for, not the council. But this is a moral issue now, this housing crisis, and it's incumbent on all of us to do everything we can. And the council seem determined to do nothing on the face of it. They'd probably say, if I said that to them, they'd probably say, no, we're really concerned. But when it comes down to it, actually doing something concrete that they could have done, they have not. They've chosen not to.
Yeah, because, that applies to quite a few things in this plan. So it also applies to the protection of trees. So we've got a very small number of trees protected. It applies to, there has been some cutback in the amount of housing that's been provided in Raglan. So they were originally proposing to have a strip all the way from Winery Reserve across to Mangatawhiri Road on where it joins the main road. They're now saying that it's just going to be that bit opposite Winery Reserve. So that they've cut it back to that extent, but there's still no structure plan that's going to say whether all the services can stand up to that extra population or what extra services will be needed. It's not looking at what's going to happen to parking, which is already a problem. And if you double or treble the population, then it's going to be even more of a problem. It's not saying what's going to happen to the main road, where we already have too many accidents and where there's already congestion at peak times at the Dimmesdale roundabout. So there's all these things which it hasn't looked into. And I think if the Environment Court was asked to look at those, then they might well say, hey, something needs to be done about this and there needs to be a better way of doing it.
So was that future urban zone that you got said was smaller? Was that on the Conin farm?
Mostly, yes.
Right, so that's actually... But did Rangatahi get all of the proposed development, future urban zone they wanted?
Yeah, because one of the problems with this plan, we've just been talking about how big it is, but another of the problems is the maps. So it takes a really long time to find what you're looking for on the maps. And if you've got a fairly powerful computer and a fairly big screen, you can manage to see it. But most people are probably excluded from this process simply by the complications of the technology.
So what page number is that, John? Can you tell me the page number? Because I'd quite like to see that.
Well, the maps are separate.
Oh.
So there's a separate link to the maps. So this is, and you can go to the District Council's website and click on maps and then click on the provisional district plan decisions version, and that will show you the maps, but they're still quite hard to navigate around. But on the Whangaroa Environmental Defence Facebook page, there is a small version of the map that shows the yellow area that they're now allocating for general housing, which, as I say, includes that. Basically in between Tahutawai Road and Winery Road, across opposite the Winery Reserve. So there's all that strip coming out from town, so that there is quite a lot more housing provided for, and yep. There's also extra housing provided for below Hills Road, not quite going up to Hills Road because there's problems with land slips on just immediately below Hills Road, but the rest of that area across to Flats Cove and that area. So that's added on. And of course, we've also got the big commercial zone that's still provided for on the Greenslade Road, Lorenzen Bay development.
Yeah.
My speculation is that that's going to be a supermarket on the edge of town at some stage.
Okay.
I can't see what else you would use such a big business area for.
Well, I thought it was just going to be kind of light industrial stuff, or just, I mean, it's all very well having Know My Business Park where it is, but it's not that close to town, and it would be sensible to have a little bit more capacity for some industrial activity. Or did you say it was commercial?
Yep, right. It certainly would help with the problem of people commuting into Hamilton if we did have more jobs locally rather than having to commute all that way to get to work.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I'm just looking at the plan, like you said. I thought the Conyng Farm area that was proposed to be future urban had been shrunk, but it's still fairly substantial. In fact, what's that yellow colour, John? Sorry, folks, we're just trying to figure out what's happening here.
The yellow colour is a general residential zone, so the whole of Raglan, virtually the existing town, is coloured yellow.
Right, okay. So that looks to me like, the side of Tahutawai Road up to, I'm not sure where, and then across the Conyng Farm to Wainui Road, like in a U-shape or an L-shape here. So that's all. So they can now go and develop that from now.
Once the plan comes into operation, it needs to go through this appeal process first. So things which haven't been appealed will be approved in the next few months, but things which are under appeal, as I say, might well take a few years to sort out.
Let's talk about the appeal process, John. Has there been time for people to appeal? Is it still open for people to appeal?
Now, the 2nd of March is the deadline for appeals, but it's only for those people who've put in submissions already.
Yep.
Quite a lot of people, because people were concerned about the development next to the museum or opposite the fire station. big block of new townhouses that's gone in there.
Yeah.
And therefore, quite a lot of people did put in submissions on that, and that entitles them to put in appeals now.
Okay.
There'll also be another process of putting in appeals, which anyone can join in, probably in about 6 months or so time. When they'll have sorted out which of the current appeals are going to accept.
Yeah.
After further submissions on them.
Hey, John, can you hit the? Are you able to hit that original sound on button on Zoom? Top left, is it there? If you hover, if you can't see it right away, it's not there. That's all right. We'll skip that. John mentions the building rounds opposite the museum, which triggered a whole lot of submissions and angst in town, and that was a large part of the submission process that John and I were involved in, and other people. One thing that I thought was going to save that was that Oranga Tamariki was submitting, or was it already in the document that you're not, and for this new district plan, you're not allowed to build big lumpy buildings like that, that they have to be broken up, so that even though it's got four units there, basically four houses on the street front, that it has to be broken up so they look different. I haven't had time to look to see if that's actually in the district plan, John, but do you think it will be?
I don't know. As I say, it's a huge document, and I've only just finished putting it together into a single PDF.
Yeah.
It's over 30 megabytes of PDF. and it, the problem is navigating your way around it, and we've still got another 3 weeks or so to do that and get appeals in. So I'm hoping that over the next few weeks I'll have done that job, and maybe when I talk to you again in a couple of weeks, I might know a lot more about it.
Do you think it's worth appealing this whole complete lack of attention to the housing crisis?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it is a problem. Even in terms of businesses, we see lots of businesses trying to find staff, and the staff can't afford to live here, so it makes it pretty hard to find people to do quite a lot of jobs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so there could be a media campaign about this. I think you've just described it, they use the threat that it's going to cost you $20,000 of your own money if you lose the appeal. So I think the thing that we have that gives people some power is the publicity, and I think the potential headline in the Waikato Times saying Waikato District Council opposed to working on the housing crisis, or you know, Waikato District Council disinterested in housing crisis, something like that, would be put them on notice that they actually need to pay attention to the issue.
So certainly worth trying, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, this discussion can be continued off the air, but that's, I just wanted to have the on-air bit, just like that's how it might have to work. That's a strategy. And certainly the council has always used the fact that it's hard work and costly for private individuals to take the council on issues like that, or to persuade them of anything, unless, of course, you're a financially secure property developer, in which case they fall over themselves to help you out, as we know.
Yeah, well, I think it all depends on money in the planning process, because if you're, as you say, if you're really wealthy, you can make it awkward for the council and therefore they give way to you. But if they have more of our ratepayer money than you've got, then it's the other way around. So, yeah. That's to a large extent why the Resource Management Act needs reform, because it does depend on having lots of money for experts and such like, as we found out with the Rangitahi appeals, that lots of people probably knew more than the so-called experts who were working for Rangitahi, but it didn't help when it came to the final decisions that were made, because the so-called experts were taken as the people who knew what they were talking about.
That was an appalling abdication of any kind of responsibility by the commissioners on that one. Folks, if you don't know, they basically said, we're just listening to the experts, and Raglan Land Company presented recognised experts, but all you other people who were opposed to the development, none of you were experts, you didn't present any experts, no experts spoke on your behalf, and so we're ignoring what you said and just listening to the experts. Even though they presented expert evidence from researchers, it just was like abdication of responsibility by the commissioners there. I think it was atrocious.
Yeah, we've been fairly negative up to now, but there are some wins in here.
Are there, so, John? What is there?
In particular, I've been going on about view shafts for a long time.
Yep.
Auckland has had view shafts for decades now, which has protected some of the important views that you get of their volcanoes and such like. And I've been asking for the same to happen with views of the coast and Karioi. And in fact, we've now got the sentence in there that says locally important view shafts means that all existing views to Whangaroa Harbour, the coast, and or Mount Karioi over the Raglan urban area from the state highway, from the main road, from the town centre, and also they've included the view up the coast from the, next to the Bible camp, they're all now locally important view shafts. Which means that the planners should minimise, I've got doubts about the next word, minimise to the extent practical, adverse physical and visual effects on the integrity of local important view shafts.
Right, so as long as no one twists their arm or pressurises them, they might, yeah, okay.
Yeah, to the extent practical worries me, because I don't see why it should be impractical to develop without locking view shafts, but so I'm probably going to appeal on that one.
Even if it costs you $20,000, John, is this worth $20,000 to you?
Yes, I think it probably is. Well, I wouldn't expect to lose on most of these things. So,
right.
I think that they're good arguments. And if you've got a dodgy argument, then it's probably not worth risking $20,000. But in last time, the council thought they were going to win, and really, the Environment Court totally sided with the case that Malibu and I put to them.
Okay, so what about this as a possibility? When we were working on the section about the special character area for Raglan Township and wanting the word affordable in there, and I saw the response from the high-level staff at council saying there's no point doing that because there was no other infrastructure in place to work on affordable housing. And Fiona McNabb from Whangaroa Affordable Housing Project said that is completely untrue, that they themselves presented, and there's the Waikato Affordable Housing Group, they're all ready to go. They are, you know, they've created infrastructure, they're ready to go, ready to work on it. So for the council staff to say what they said was patently untrue, is that sort of thing that's going to appeal to the Environment Court?
Yeah, well, that was the problem with for council last time that they were saying things that were only partially true. And when we pointed out the other things that they hadn't said or missed or ignored or whatever, then the court was on our side.
Yeah. So I guess it's that thing that council thinks that they can just fob people off, and there's not a lot of individuals like you who are prepared to go to the Environment Court, of course.
Yeah. Because it was a risk. I could have lost 20,000, but I didn't. So I thought it was fairly certain that I wasn't going to, but it wasn't a complete certainty.
You can
never tell when you go to a court of law what's going to happen.
Does it depend?
One of the problems with law, which is another thing that needs reforming.
So just describe the situation when you do that. Do you have to go to an environment court in Wellington or something like that?
Oh, this was in Hamilton.
Okay. And there's a judge or several judges, or are they called judges?
Yeah, just one judge.
Okay. And it's their decision?
Well, of course, it could have been appealed, but I think the council realised that they were onto another loser if they appealed it. So.
Yeah.
Because, of course, it could have been taken all the way to a Supreme Court. It's the Environment Court is the lowest court in that hierarchy.
Right. And you represent yourself, so you don't have to pay legal fees or fees for planners or other experts.
Well, it depends how confident you are at appearing in front of a court.
Well, yes. So what's your qualification to do that, or your background that you're comfortable doing that?
So, and if you feel comfortable doing that, as with me last time, I got Malibu to come along with me, and he was very helpful. So if you get somebody else to come along with you, that can also be helpful. But as I say, we're a long way off that. We're still at the stage of the first appeals, and then there's another submission stage, and then there's negotiations with council, and only after 2 or 3 years of that, you end up at the situation where you've got to decide, am I going to risk going to court, and how am I going to do it?
I'm just curious, though, for people, because you didn't have to hire anyone, you worked for councils in the UK, didn't you? So this is kind of a familiar environment for you?
I've not been in court very often, but yes.
And Malibu has worked, he's actually worked as a commissioner on things like district plan changes, hasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. So he is definitely qualified and experienced.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. It certainly was helpful having him there. And I think it also added credibility as far as the court was concerned, because they knew him.
Yeah, that's one of the things, isn't it? I noticed, I was looking at the submission from someone, might have been Kainga Ora, it was a planning submission, and the whole first page was the author writing about basically bigging themselves up, but in an academic way, by talking about their qualifications and their experience. And as I'm not quite a layperson, because I do have a degree and I've kind of vaguely been in that area, but I would have thought, if you've got facts and research, why do you need to big yourself up in that way? But it just seems to be how it is.
Yeah, well, as we were discussing, that was the problem with Rangitahi's decision, that it was based on all that sort of professional so-called experience and ability.
Yeah, and it's really about the bureaucratic class maintaining control. I think that's the subtext, isn't it?
Yeah, well, again, that's why the Resource Management Act needs reform. It was a very good idea when it was introduced, but after that, the courts got at it, and but they made it very much something which was a clone of the previous legislation.
This is actually something that I'd have confidence in the National Party dealing with. There's a bit of an attitude there that sick of the experts interfering with things.
I think there's a move in all parties to reform the Resource Management Act, probably with different motivations, but I think that everyone's looking at it and recognising that it doesn't really work for anyone. It doesn't work for developers, and it doesn't work for people trying to protect the environment.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, John, maybe we can talk about some other things, because we've got, 17 minutes left or more. It would probably take longer. But do we want to talk about the community board? Can we say what's happening
Well, there's not a huge amount of detail on the community board because maybe because it was the Christmas holidays, but reports don't seem to have been written. So we've got a heading which says airfield, sound splash, local bus, Manu Bay planting, closed circuit TV, Raglan naturally, and councillor all up for a verbal update. So there's nothing in the agenda to say what any of those items are. So there may well be quite an interesting amount of information comes out, but we haven't got it at the moment.
So there's supposed to be a breakdown on the fencing costs, which is kind of ironic now because the fence has literally been broken down.
There's a few parts of it left.
Okay, so we may or may not learn more there. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, well, there was... I think I learnt more from the Waikato Times probably than from anywhere else that said that the cross that had been painted on the airfield was at the request of the Civil Aviation Authority. So, because they recognised that the fence was no longer effective and that it wasn't safe for planes to be landing there at the moment.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which is why we've had a nice quiet Christmas, I think. So.
Well, you mean the lack of planes flying overhead? I hadn't really noticed, but that is a really good point. Yeah, and I'd imagine the word went out amongst the pilot fraternity anyway prior to that.
Because it's been open and closed with the various works that have been going on anyway, so I think probably no one's quite sure whether it's open or closed. Probably the new thing which is in the community board agenda is the what they're calling the Weenira walkway, which I've always called the walkway between the jetty and the footbridge and between the fire station and the footbridge.
Yeah.
And for those who've looked at it at all carefully, it's probably not surprising that they've reported it's likely to fail further over the next 5 years and that the concrete footing is insufficient and undermining the structure of the seawall.
So hold on, fail further. Where is it failing now?
Well, I walked along it yesterday evening, and particularly as you get round towards the Coast Guard shed where they often have the garage sales, then if you look over the seawall there, you'll see those great big holes underneath, and there's not really much supporting the top few centimetres of concrete.
So you know what this means, John? This means an engineered solution with a dirty great handrail along there, and we lose another little unique thing about Raglan. I wonder if people will camp out to stop that one.
it's certainly hinting that there ought to be a handrail along there.
The council nowadays never build something there without a handrail. Not a snowball's chance in hell.
Because it needs to be quite a bit wider as well, because when it was built, it was built over a century ago, but there were only a few hundred people in Raglan then, whereas now we're looking to having thousands of people in Raglan, plus all the tourists. Plus they've allowed bicycles on it as well, so it's a shared route.
What about that idea, John, that you'd come over the footbridge from the Papahua side, come over the footbridge and go straight up some stairs onto a piece of council-owned land there, through that property and through an extension of the Electric Avenue lane. Is anyone still talking about that idea? I know former councillor Clint Baddeley was big on that one.
It does get mentioned from time to time, but I think it's all part of a treaty negotiation.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe, and which applies to the airfield as well, of course, that I think when all these treaty claims are finally settled, we might hear more about things like that.
But now, just on that, while we bring that up, I know talking to Angeline Greensill that they were trying to get Andrew Little to come to town to talk about how the local hapu were to be represented. Have you heard anything lately about what's happening there?
Well, only that Waikato Times article about the airfield, which again, Angeline Greensill's quoted as saying that that they've been negotiating for years to decades, I suppose, to try and get the airfield and the various other claims settled. These people have been have worked tirelessly for 20, 30, 40 years researching Okapapa and working really hard for their people. And she said that I'm the claimant who took the Waitangi Tribunal claim on all the lands around Raglan that belong to our tribe, and the airfield is one of them. And I'm not prepared to mix our stuff with what they're doing. So it's obviously a fairly negotiating sort of sensitive area, and they don't want to sort of rock the boat at all.
Yeah, so, the situation she described to me that they had was that there was a danger that her hapu was going to be represented by Tainui over the hill, and who just have nothing much to do with this side, and that was the government. It's typical of the government. They've done this in a lot of areas as well. Just said they just want to talk to one entity and represent all the other little entities, and it just is a completely unfair to many hapu who feel hard done by that situation. So this has happened before. So Andrew Little was supposed to be coming to town to meet with Tainui Awhero and talk about that issue, and the lockdowns kind of got in the way of that. And I'm a little bit out of touch now. I think it is going to happen, but I don't know when. Or maybe it has happened and I don't know about it.
Well, I think they need to do something about the seawall rather more urgently than that. So I think that's going to be done separately, and then maybe at some stage there will be what seems to be a very sensible proposal to go straight through in a straight line from the footbridge to Wainui Road.
And if you've just tuned in and wondering why John suddenly started talking about the seawall, that's where we just started with this discussion, that the seawall running along from the jetty to the footbridge on the town side of the harbour is not well. It's not healthy, is it, John?
No. Well, they say likely to fail further over the next 5 years. So, yes. There's also the renaming of the placemaking and blueprint, which is now going to be called community-led development, and they're proposing a work plan and workshops, and they're proposing that's a way of using the discretionary fund, because the community board's now being given more power to do what it likes with the discretionary fund.
Yeah.
And one of the applications in there is from the growers market for $3,000 to pay staff to help run the growers market.
Right, interesting. You know that market, John, I just wanted to quickly mention this. So quite a few years ago, someone came to the community board and said, we'd like to do a Friday market down outside Orca in the car park there. And the community board chairperson at the time, who's not on the board now, just rubbished the idea and it never went ahead. But I always thought that was actually a good idea, and I was always wondering if the growers market could actually go down there and be more noticeable to the shopping public. It's just a thought.
Well, it would be good to make more use of that area rather than just park cars there anyway. But it's always seemed to me that the town square idea was a good one, and that one's another one that's on hold at the moment, because we haven't got any more progress on any of these schemes reported on the community board agenda.
All the projects in town at this board meeting?
They're certainly not on the agenda, but as I say, people don't seem to have been writing reports over Christmas. It could be that they come along and give a report. And one of the difficulties is that they haven't actually publicised how to get to the meeting, because it's not going to be a physical meeting, it's going to be an online meeting.
Yeah.
They haven't publicised how to join the meeting, so I'm not sure how many people are actually going to turn up at it or be online at it, because in theory there's still a public forum, but in practice very few people turned up at the last one, and there's been no more publicity for this one, probably even less.
So if you just want to watch it, folks, the easy way is just to go to on YouTube and go to the Waikato District Council channel, and it'll pop up there. But if you want to have your say, you need to join the Zoom meeting. And John, you just beeped at me. And if you want to join the Zoom meeting, you need to get hold of, at this stage, all I know to do is to talk to Gabrielle Parson, the community board chairperson, and get the meeting ID off her.
Yep, that sounds a good solution. There's not an awful lot of other things on there. I thought it was interesting that they've now taken the register of interests off the agenda, because they've been on for, well, since May last year, and it shows the various family trusts and such like that the community board members are involved in, and the companies they've got an interest in and such like, and now they're saying those are no longer going to be on the agendas, which seems to be a step backwards, but maybe there's some suggestion that the privacy is a problem, but if privacy comes in and people have influences that, that decide the way they vote rather than voting in the public interest, then I think that's another issue as well. So
I did look at that register, John, and there was I don't think there wasn't anything you wouldn't expect there. None of our community board members having large holdings and surprising organisations or pieces of land or anything like that.
But that's not to say people in the future won't.
So. No. All I can tell you about is what I read last month, basically.
Manu Bay Breakwater is an ongoing saga that they postponed it yet again with the excuse of COVID.
When's the movie coming out, John?
I think they want something to film that's actually action before they have a movie. And the wharf structural repairs, pontoons and walkways, there's apparently a request for tenders for that work going out in a couple of weeks' time, but we still don't know what the tenders are for. So, again, I wonder if those will come out at the community board meeting on Wednesday.
Won't those tenders be for structural repairs, pontoons and a walkway, like it says? Or you'd want more detail?
Well, yeah, I'm just wondering if they're going to need a resource consent and whether that's part of the tendering that they're going to be asking for.
I see. So are they tendering for a consultant to get permission and do the plans before they tender for people to actually physically build it?
Yeah, because usually things that happen in the coastal area need a resource consent, and usually that's a public notified one, so I would expect that some people would want to know what was happening down there and whether it was going to affect any wildlife or any businesses or views or anything else.
Yeah. Okay, can we just have a quick look at your notes for the Water Governance Board, John? I know that doesn't sound exciting, listeners, but hold on. There is the issue of this future sewage consent about what we do with our poo, basically. Should we start with that, John?
Well, there's also the related item of service requests on the community board agenda. So they got told that there'd been 7 wastewater overflows in the period October to December, and only 4 of them got dealt with within what the council regards as the good time.
These overflows, John, they are presumably not very serious like we used to have, like didn't go into the harbour or anything.
Well, then you have a look at the Waters Governance Board agenda, and it talks about there were 2 overflow events in Raglan that entered the ground floor of a house. The first blockage was cleared by jetting. On the second blockage, CCTV was used and more extensive jetting undertaken.
So it did go into the water, but someone's house. Our thoughts go out to you here from Raglan Community Radio, if that was your house.
It doesn't say which house. I have no idea which part of town it is. But,
no, if you're talking about privacy, I think that's something people may want to keep private, not have us talking about.
So that's one of the things in the Waters Governance Board report. It always puzzles me that these things don't pop up in the community board agenda as well, because I would have thought they'd be things that the community board was interested in, because they're also talking about fecal coliform breaches in the resource consent for wastewater.
Is that still happening?
Well, it talks about an assessment to address the suspended solids and fecal coliform breaches, which is happening at the moment. So that assessment's going on. They haven't actually decided what to do about them. They're also talking about sampling errors and installing an automatic sampler. Of course, there's the ongoing discussion about how they're going to upgrade the sewage plant.
Yep.
And they seem to be doing some fairly detailed studies of how much of the sewage output they can put onto land rather than putting into the harbour.
Yeah.
So that sounds like good news, but we still see the detail of that.
I see it says that they're to engage a valuer to prepare a business case for private land discussions. Progress yeah, regarding which, the co-use of Wainui Reserve. Well, that's not private land.
Which suggests they're getting quite a long way with it if they've got to that stage of talking about prices.
And a January meeting has been set, so theoretically they've already talked about that with the people involved, landholders involved.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know there was any private land available.
They were at one stage talking about some land near Mangatawhiri Road, just on the Rackland side of Mangatawhiri Road, going down to the Okotoru stream there.
Right.
So I think it's probably in that area. There was also a map showing that they might possibly have some that they could use in the nearer to Rackland, because that they were showing what they were calling Parcel A, private land, which had younger soil and a strategic location for the greater good of Rackland. And also Parcel B, private land, a plateau area with young deep ash soils and potential for growing, using it as the town grew. So, because one of the problems with designing a sewage scheme is you've also got the district plan going on at the same time and you're not sure how many you're actually planning to serve with your sewage scheme.
Yeah, it's a moving target, isn't it?
Yes, which makes it really hard to do.
They should allow for a lot of people, I think. Uh-huh. I think that's the thing. So, as well, a bit more background to that, folks. Last year they were talking about, for the land-based treatment, also using parts of Wainui Reserve and the golf course as well, John?
Yes, so the golf course and Wainui Reserve.
And this has been, if you've just tuned into this issue, this has been a festering issue in Whangaroa for decades now. It does look like, I mean, we've been criticising the council today, but it does look like that is something that we might be getting some kind of resolution on, even if it's only partial in some ways.
Yep, it seems to be taking longer than they expected, but if they get it right, then that's good news.
Yeah, I know. I had this issue with council. I've talked about this before. If they go fast, things don't normally work out well. So I'm quite happy for them to take their time to get it right. Because as we say, this has been festering for a long time and the community wants to get it right.
Because I was opposed to Watercare taking over the water services, but they seem to be doing a significantly better job than the council was doing. So,
yeah,
both on this and on stormwater as well.
And they seem genuinely interested in doing this project. Which is important. All right.
Maybe in wrapping up, I can just mention that at the moment there's a policy committee meeting going on council, which is looking at Easter trading rules and whether they ought to keep the same rules which allow shops to stay open on Easter Sunday.
That's happening like literally as we speak.
Yep.
Okay.
And there were 121 people put in submissions, and just over a third of them supported the current regime, and over two-thirds supported the change to actually recognise Easter Sunday and keep it. Various people put in comments about commercialism and consumerism and family time for workers and being revered by Christians and people needing a break and that sort of thing. So, but at the end of the day, they're only listening to people, so it'd be interesting to see what they decide this morning. And right. I also looked up the census figures on religion and hadn't realised before that almost two-thirds of Raglan is no religion at all, and only a quarter of Raglan is Christian.
So that's when people identify on the census form what their religious status is. That's the results coming out there.
Yeah, and I've also been looking back a century ago, and a century ago, half the people in Raglan were affiliated to the Anglican Church, so things have changed quite a bit in the last century.
Yeah.
But maybe we can talk about that another week.
So it's gone from half to about half a percent, maybe. What would that be?
Yep.
150 people. That's probably overstating it. Yeah, yeah, big changes in the culture in that regard over the last 100 years, for sure. All right, John, was that everything? Well, it's not everything, but it's...
That's all we've got time for, I think. Yeah. I see it's 3 minutes past 10 now. So, yeah, we could carry on talking about loads of things, but I think we've probably covered what we really need to talk about. But there's lots of other interesting things going on as well, so maybe we can talk about those another week or in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. And are you on the air tonight?
Yep, so probably be going into a bit more detail on some of these things this evening at 6 o'clock onwards.
Yeah, yeah. All right, folks. Tune in for John, 98.1 FM or online at regnumradio.com. And John, thank you for your time this morning.
Okay, thanks for talking to me. Have a good day. Bye.
Okay, folks, that is the end of the show for the day. And time for me to go as well. I'll see you all tomorrow morning.